But also he emphasizes that the Gnevis Das is a very significant consideration, and that raising money with the false pretense, even just of the popularity of the cause, he takes that as a very serious issue. And he makes reference to a Gemara in Ksubis, which I sent around today also, just an interesting idea, where in the context of negotiating a nidunya, so we saw that one of the Amoraim said that simply if I show up in the room and people want to be mechaved me, so that itself is pressure, and that itself upsets the dynamic, and it highlights just how careful the subtlety is here, and just how subtle the issue is, and that we're really afraid that to extract anything under either false pretenses or under the pressure of embarrassment is problematic. And he noted there that there is a problem that it could constitute kfiyah shelo kedin. We saw the discussion that when kfiyah is called for, so that maybe there is room to see some of these tactics as kfiyah, maybe yes, maybe no. But the flip side of that would be also that being that we're not generally using kfiyah, and we certainly don't have the right to assume that it's applicable to any given cause or organization that may show up nowadays, so the possibility of an unjustified kfiyah is an even greater concern. Also, while we're talking about Shalach Manas, so there's so much to say about Shalach Manas, so when we spoke about it on Sunday, we only just really put our toe in the water, we only just really touched the surface, and we didn't get to talk about all of the issues, and we probably won't, but yesterday we added one more about Kfiya. Today, just while talking about Gnevis Das, so just mention that there is also a concern of Gnevis Das that comes up with Shalach Manas, and it's particularly interesting because it highlights also the dinim of Gnevis Das and the issue of Shalach Manas specifically. That, let's say, for example, all kinds of different iterations, but let's say the whole question of regifting in general is always an interesting discussion. So you get something, you pass it on to someone else. But let's say also you get something or you have something which you're allergic to, or it's a hashgacha that you have a chumra not to hold by, or there's some other issue. So is that a problem in giving that as Shalach Manas? So what's the potential issue? So the Gemara in Chulin, which discusses the prohibition of Gnevis Das, and that Gemara is itself a fascinating Gemara also for some of the subtleties that it brings up. So there the Gemara mentions that if you are giving meat to a non-Jew and the meat is not kosher, just to generalize the example there, the Gemara talks about you haven't removed the Gidhanosha. It's a little more complicated, but let's say the meat is non-kosher and you are giving it or even selling it, but let's keep things more straightforward. Let's say you're giving it as a gift to your non-Jewish neighbor. So the Gemara says that you have to inform him that it's non-kosher. So what's the concern? You know, he doesn't have to keep kosher. So why is it so important that you let him know that it's not kosher? Shmuel?
He might assume that it's kosher and pass it off to a Jew.
So that could be, but then that would be a big jump. And the Jew receiving it from him would have more of a responsibility, presumably, to verify that. So yes, you could imagine that happening, but as far as your actual liability for that or reason to expect that, probably it's a little bit more far-fetched. So what else could be the issue? It's a really instructive and subtle point. So what's the point? The point is that if he thinks that this is kosher, so the level of gratitude he's going to have is going to be different. And he's going to think that this is something you could be eating yourself, and yet you are choosing to give it up and give it to him. And the level of hachzakas tova, the level of gratitude that he will have, is going to be different. Now, it's really all a matter of degree, because let's say, for example, the food was treif. So the fact that you chose to give it to him instead of throwing it out or instead of giving it to a different non-Jew, so you should still be somewhat appreciative that he is the recipient of the non-kosher food that you're going to do something with, even if you can't eat yourself. But the difference between that gratitude and the gratitude he would have for something that you actually forfeited, even though you could use it yourself, that's already enough to constitute Gneivos Das. That's what the Gemara essentially is telling us, and that's actually how the whole sugya of Gneivos Das gets brought into Chulin from that din, and then goes on to give many other examples, but it starts off from that point, that HaShalech, that somebody who's sending this meat to a non-Jew, has to tell him about the kashrus issues. And see, it's a little more complicated that the Gemara is coming from a position of Gidhanasha, because that, theoretically, you could fix, but the point is you didn't make the effort to fix, to take out the Gidhanasha, and maybe he would think that it was something that you did put in the effort, but let's make it a little simpler. Let's say it was food that really became treif, so still there'd be a problem in not telling him that, because he will give you more credit than you deserve. So transplanting that to Shalach Manas, that's also an issue. But it's particularly interesting because we saw that might be one of the fundamental points of Shalach Manas. That if Shalach Manas is about helping with the Suda, so then okay, what difference does it make whether it's something you would have eaten under yourself or not? Doesn't necessarily matter. But if it's something that's designed to impress the other guy, and we mentioned because somebody raised the issue, let's say the same way that somebody is very wealthy and he gives a very small kind of gift, so there is some discussion as to whether or not that satisfies, because the recipient might say, oh, look how much he could be giving and how should I be impressed by that? So here as well, it's the same kind of logic, that if it's something that the person thinks you could be using yourself, they rate that more significantly than something that you can't use on your own. And how that affects both directions, the Shalach Manas question is an interesting question, but it also just ties into this whole Gneivos Das issue that we've been touching upon. Hi.
But as opposed to like a normal, like outside of a mitzvah context gift, like everyone knows by Shalach Manos that part of Shalach Manos is like you have to give. So I would think like the friendship aspect wouldn't be so much that you decided to give versus not give, but that you decided to give to me. Like that would be more highlighted.
Yes, that's a very interesting point, you know, and that is also something we touched upon a little bit the other day, right? How much does the compulsory aspect affect it, and which is why also we talked about yesterday the question of kfiya, and would that make things too blatant, right? So you say, well, why is kfiya so different from knowing that there is a chiyuv to begin with, which is an interesting question to consider. So you're focusing on the tovas hanah, as we call it, the fact that you choose to give to that this person as opposed to that person. But here it's really more about the quality. So, okay, yeah, I got to give something, but am I giving you something impressive or am I giving you something less impressive? Am I giving you something that I had to go out and get or something that I just had anyway and can't use? So the idea that it's a matter of degree is significant. It's also something to ponder. So it's all very interesting applications. So what I wanted to kind of segue out of the discussion of deception here and into other issues, but I wanted to share with you, there is a tshuva of the Lev Avram who brings up a fascinating issue, which really puts a whole new spin on the whole question of the impact of deception. The Lev Avram, so Yaron, maybe you'll recognize the name before your time, but Lev Avram was from Muncie, Avram Weinfeld, and the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael is named after him. And there are a number of Sfarim. There's a Sefer was published after he passed away of Chidushim al Torah. We've actually sometimes referred to it in Parshas Shir. And his Sefer of Tshuvas are particularly interesting. He has some, if I'm not mistaken, Shechter's a big admirer of his Tshuvas. He has both interesting questions and interesting approaches to questions. So here, this is in Simon Pei Vav in the Tshuva's Label Ram. So he brings up a fascinating issue. So let's say you donate to somebody, and we were discussing a few stories about this kind of thing happening. You donate to somebody, and it turns out that it becomes clear afterwards that he is dishonest and that he fooled you. Can you demand the money back in Beis Din? And what are the issues connected to that? So what's your initial thought about that? What would you say, Zach?
You say it's like a mekach tos?
So it seemed like there is a mekach tos there, right? But the question is, so what is the impact of that mekach tos? Does that make you the victim? Can you come and demand compensation? Is that the case? Is it a mekach in a sense? Does it have the same rules as mekach? A mekach is a transaction specifically, right? The premise of a mekach, and it's interesting how this ends up transferring over to marriage, since we talked about that the other day. So the whole premise of a transaction there is that there's some kind of mutual benefit. Right? So I gave you this and you gave me that. But if you don't have a transaction, so then the underlying structure of a mekach tos may not exist. And I gave you something, it was never really contingent on you doing anything. But what is really being highlighted here is not so much that issue, which is itself interesting, what are the implications of mekach tos, because the truth is, it would seem pretty clear that it's not right that this recipient gets to hold on to this money because he got it under fraudulent pretenses. But there is an interesting dynamic here, which is also going to segue into our Purim discussion specifically. Who exactly is the victim here? And who is the offender? Why is there a suffix about both those halves of the equation? Can anyone figure out why there's room to wonder about both of those? Seems very perplexing why I'm raising this issue. Who's the victim? Let's start with that. Somebody fools me into giving them staka. Who's the victim? You see more than one choice, Max?
Maybe person who actually needs the staka that gotten the money.
Okay, right, so you went right to the less obvious choice, right, that you would think that, okay, someone defrauded me, so I'm the victim, because they made me give under false pretenses, but maybe not, right, maybe I have to give staka anyway. So who really lost out here? The person who lost out was who should have gotten the money. Shmuel?
I don't understand why it's a binary.
I mean, it's either or?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be either or, and on some level, we're both victimized. Big level, we're both victimized, right? I have my efforts diverted and maybe negated, and the worthy recipient has a loss in terms of what he should have gotten. So that's for sure true, and that's a part of what we've been highlighting from the beginning, that deception and staka is so much worse than deception in other areas. For reasons like that, there's multiple victims. But the reason it's somewhat binary here is because if we're saying that this is something that should be recoverable in Beis Din, who is the plaintiff? And who is it who has the standing to fight this issue? It's actually a very interesting question if you think about it. Right? And that could create a big technicality. Because, yes, while morally it's certainly wrong for this guy to walk off with this money that he got under false pretenses, and if we're looking to his conscience, we may find all kinds of other possibilities, but let's assume that we need to actually formally go after him in Beis Din. So who has the standing to do this? Yeah, so
maybe I missed part of the case. Is the case where the guy is pretending to be a specific Ani? Or
no, he's pretending to be an Ani.
So how, like, who would represent, there'd be someone who would represent all Aniyam?
That's the question. So maybe there is no such thing. Right, so there is a concept of Mamon Shein Lo Tovim. Right, that there's money which maybe is ill-gotten, maybe it's in the wrong hands, but there's just nobody who has the standing, which is a legal term which you find comes up in American cases a lot, that there's some kind of a social issue that you want to pursue through the courts, so you need to at least have some claim to be affected by the story, otherwise, even if you're very upset about something, doesn't mean you have the ability to sue. You have to have standing. You have to be somewhat a part of it. So who has the right to go after this? If the guy stole from me, so then, okay, so I have the right to go after it. If I had to give anyway, and we look at it as he stole from the Aniyan, so then maybe it's their loss, and they need to go after it. But who are they? So Mam and Shein Lo Tovim. Or is there a tzedakah representative who can go after it? It's really a very interesting question if you think about it. Related, now why did I say also that there's some room to wonder who's the real criminal here, so to speak? Who's the real offender? What's the suffix about that? Zach?
Maybe the giver didn't investigate enough?
Maybe the giver didn't investigate enough. Right, and that's a part of what we've been seeing in some of our sugyas, that maybe you have a responsibility to look into what you're doing. And if I gave to a fraud, if I gave to a con man, maybe I'm the one who should be in trouble on some level. Now we have to figure out what the consequences of that is, but maybe it's my problem. I'm a pusher. If I gave to a person who wasn't really legit. Now, if that's the case, it becomes relevant, as it brings up here, and this is why it's also going to be a big segue into Matanos Levyon, we'll talk about tomorrow. The Chiyuv Bedika is not constant. Right? The extent to which you are obligated to look into the qualifications of the recipient is not always the same. It differs, as we see from our Gemara a little bit, that it differs from different causes. Right? It's the difference between those who are asking for mizonos and those who are asking for ksus. So should that be a difference? And also, as we'll discuss, there's a whole different standard on Purim when we're talking about Matanos Levyonim. So if this question is tied in to the Chovas HaBedika of the giver, so maybe you'll get a different answer on Purim than you'll get on other days, which is itself a fascinating possibility. Now, it could be that if somebody conned me any other day of the year, fool me once, shame on you. Also, I guess it would be fool me on Purim, shame on you. Fool me any other day, shame on me. That doesn't rhyme as well. But, that may be shame on me if I don't look into it enough on a normal day. But on Purim, the standard might be different, so shame on you. It's your assignment for Purim to come up with a good rhyme for that possible scenario. So, then, in the context of discussing this question, so the Lev Avraham raises the issue here, once we start going down this route. So how do we consider the whole question of both the obligation of tzedakah, and more specifically, if somebody takes a neder to tzedakah, how can they ever be really confident that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing? If there is going to be room to wonder if the recipient is legit or not, when does that cast too much of a suffix on your fulfillment of either the general mitzvah or your specific nether. That's itself a very fascinating question. And he notes here, just also to build on what we said yesterday, so we mentioned the Tshuva of the Rashba, very frequently quoted Tshuva of the Rashba in Siman Yud-Chas, where he says that there's no bracha on staka because it requires participation from someone else. And later Svarim have a hard time with this because the whole scenario that we're so worried that the guy might leave you hanging, certainly easy enough to imagine situations where that's not so likely. Let's say if the person came and asks you, so what is the likelihood he's going to leave you hanging? Although the truth is, if you don't give him enough, they sometimes may leave you hanging, but okay. But it seems like there are scenarios where you could be pretty confident that it's going to be taken. So he suggests here that maybe the issue is that we don't even know, even once you give it to the ani, if it's actually called staka. So how much is that an issue? So he raised a lot of these points, just to quickly share with you how he talks about it, just to give a little bit of a window into this. So it says, Nishalti ba'achad shenasan mamun b'teres tzedaka, le'achad shechashev shu ani. So somebody gave money as tzedaka to somebody he thought was an ani. V'acharkach nisvade shehayir amai. So it turns out afterwards that this person was actually a rami, sheyeshlo v'notel, that he actually had money and he took it. Im yachal litbaya l'din v'lo haitzi amamun b'dayanim olo. So can you sue this person and take him to Bezdin? Or is that not an option? He writes, Reishus kol davar chaleinu chovas ad biur. First we have to examine the whole premise here. Mi choshev habayilim l'gabe mamon zeh. Who is considered to be the owner? Who's considered to be the relevant principal here as far as this money? Who's going to be the one who has the standing to bring the case? If you can say that he robbed from this donor who gave, so then he is the plaintiff. He's the one who's going to have the stand to bring the case. If you're going to say that he robbed the poor population, so then maybe we should say this is money that doesn't have any representative. And he's going to then, unfortunately, despite his malfeasance here, he still would be exempt from having to pay under those circumstances. And he knows that this is a position with Shuvas Marit. So here he makes reference to Mishnah Melech, that was the last source on the Makaris that was a little more long and involved. But the Mishnah Melech knows Mova Velova, the Gozel Mamon Staka Patim Milishalim, having Mamon Shelo Tovim, that as ironic and as evil as it sounds, somebody who steals money from Staka is going to end up being Patir because there's a Mamon that doesn't have any representative. So hinei l'chara hayanirali l'chalek. So on the surface, you might make a distinction. Here he's making a reference to how staka is viewed as a neder. Beinim amar habalabayis harei zeh l'amar harei alai. Sometimes the difference between somebody who commits a certain sum of money specifically to staka, say a certain object specifically to staka, to somebody says Hare Alai, who takes upon himself an obligation where it's not necessarily about this specific item. Dim Amar Hare Zeh, De'ena Chayiv Achriyuso, Hamam Anaisim Rishul Staka, because if he commits something to a specific object, so then he does not take responsibility for replacing that object if it gets lost. So it becomes right away the property of Staka. So then, lo gazlu mimenu midi. So then, they didn't steal anything from him. Rak haniyim. It's the poor people who got robbed here. Shal yidei sharamai lokham lo yitnem laniyim. Because since the ramai took it, so it's the aniyim who aren't getting it. But ironically, it could work out better for him in this world, in this particular mortal Besdin, because there isn't any representatives. Mam Shein Lo Tov. Aval Mavala Bayis Omer Hari Alai, if he says it's my obligation, and Imkein Chayev Acher Yuso, so therefore he's going to have to make sure it happens one way or another. V'yitztarech Litein L'Ani Acher Oslei Heschum. So now, once he discovers he gave to the wrong guy, he's going to have to give that same amount of money to somebody else. Also, Aschum Shenasim Haramoi Kidei Shel Yavra Al Nidro, so he shouldn't be lacking his neder. Imkein Gazal Asabal Abayis V'Havelim Mabin Shleish L'Tovim. So then he's the victim, and there is a representative here. There is a plaintiff to pursue the case. Now, it's a very fascinating question. So then he says, "I'm not machashuv v'nichamti." I thought about it, changed my mind. Af even somebody who declares specific money for tzedakah, the ain't no chayv rachriusol. He doesn't have to back it up. Mikomakom davka mikineva v'aveid v'onsin is only very specific exemptions that he's not responsible if it gets stolen from him or if it gets lost. Aval kan shu atzmo nasim l'ramai. So here, this is the main issue that we started with. But it didn't get stolen from him, right? The idea that he's not chayiv to make it up if something happens to it. That would be if somebody stole it from him or there was some kind of accident. But what happened here? Aval kan shuhu atzmo nasan l'ramai. He's the one who gave it to this swindler. Efshir dechashuv ksas peshaya. It's possible that he is considered a little bit of a negligent person here. Why do you give it to him? The Hayalo lived like Acharav, that it was his job to investigate after him. So then, maybe he should have to make it up. And maybe he was irresponsible with this dedicated item, and he let it get away, so he should have to pay back. So now, here's where it gets even more fascinating, that if we're going to put it on this chovas bedika, so then, as we indicated, that sometimes shifts. Ach yesh l'chalik b'zeh, b'yam nasim l'ani mizonos uksus, then we should distinguish between whether he gave food or clothing. D'hinei yisab above a basra chesam aralef, right, to go back to our Gemara, d'bodkin l'ksus v'yam bodkin l'mizonos. That we have to investigate when somebody comes to ask for clothing, but not when they ask for food. V'chein nifzak, you saw this, should be Yerideus in the Reishon and Aleph Yud. V'imkein imnosna l'mizonos haray onus. So maybe we should say that if somebody came asking you for food, so then it's not your fault, because you had to do what you had to do, because Chazal said, don't push too hard to investigate when somebody needs food. So if the guy fooled you by asking for food, maybe it's Chazal's fault. Maybe you are considered to be, so to speak, forced into the position because of your loyalty to Chazal, which is a concept that brings a reference here that you find sometimes the Gemara has, that you are considered to be bound against your will because you are following what the rabbis tell you to do. So if the rabbi is saying, Vodkin l'mzonos, so then what could you do? You had to give to this guy. It's not your fault. V'meila patel shalim, de'ein l'chashvil l'peshaya, d'lay badak. So maybe we should say, then you can't call this person a peshaya. D'harei chazal tzivu oso sholivdok. Chazal said, don't check. Avol nasan l'ksus, he's asking for clothing. Da'az, other abarid sivu also l'tok acharav, they said you should check. Imen aramai, v'loi badak, and you didn't. Chashiv peshaya, then you're considered negligent. It's tzarech l'shalim, you should have to pay, k'mo v'omar e'loi, just like someone just took upon himself a general obligation. Devozeh, poshu l'fian esdaiti d'chayiv. There we've seen clear that you are chayiv. D'kol kamash l'inosun l'ani amiti, l'kayim nidro. Because if you made a neder to give tzedakah, and it turns out that because you didn't check, you didn't give to a real ani, so then you did not fulfill your neder. Now this brings up issues, like when we started, about where the focus of tzedakah is. If somebody makes a neder to Staka, and he gives with full sincerity, maybe we should say that he's doing Staka. But we saw also from the Gemara and Bava Kamma and the whole discussion with the Rama, right, you recall, that you give to a non-deserving person, like the story with Yirmiyahu, so it's not Staka. So then, what happens to your neder? Ve'ei mahakshos lefiza, don't ask me based on this. Eich rishayim lifsok mamon letztaka. How can anyone ever commit money to tztaka? V'lama lo nechush dilma zeh sheyavo hamamon liyado yeh ramay. Maybe we should always worry that the person who you end up giving it to is considered a rabbi. V'nimtzo avarnu al yisr noder ve'eino mishalim. And it'll turn out that you'll be guilty of having made a neder and not paying. And that whole Gemara and Sukkah that we were talking about, posek tzedaka b'rav ve'eino mishalim, you could end up being that guy inadvertently because you gave it to somebody and you'll never know if he necessarily is legit or not. Uviyaradeya reishnun pasa nifsak dal kolpanim l'kula alves tzara mitzvilindor. So maybe you'll say, okay, I'll be careful. I'll never make a neder l'tzedaka. But it says in Shulchan Aruch that there are times when it is appropriate, let's say, if you're in a real moment of tzaras, the alfinu medrash rabba mivyidor Yaakov neder. It's derived from Yaakov who made such a neder. Beginning of Parsha Sevayetze. So v'yesh lomar, so that's the question, right? How could you ever make a neder to tzedaka? You're always going to be at risk that because of the Ramos, you may not actually be fulfilling it. So maybe when it comes to Nedarim, maybe we can answer it. That the rule is we follow human language when we're talking about Nedarim. And who kivein benidro l'stamaniyim hashchuchim. So when a person made a neder, I'm going to give to aniyim. What do you have in mind? He had the poor people who were around. And so the people he sees in the street to ask for tzedakah, that's what he had in mind. So the hainu la niyei safek lo niyei vadai. People, the aniyim that you encounter, are always aniyei safek. So when you make a neder to give to aniyim, since nedarim we follow common interpretations of language, so therefore, what does aniyim mean? Aniyim does not necessarily mean people who are actually poor by the view of Eliyahu HaNavi, but it means people who are perceived as poor. And that's what you had in mind when you made the neder. Well, it's all very fascinating stuff. So therefore, a person is yotze with whatever aniyim he is perceiving as aniyim as far as the neder is concerned. Ach, kol ze bestam. That's all in general. Shein lochush kol zman shlo nodolo. So as long as you have no reason to think this guy's a faker, then you're not obligated to worry maybe you did not fulfill your neder. Aval macharkach nodolo shay rama. Let's say afterwards it did become clear to you that he was indeed a faker. Now you know. So then it's no longer a situation where we're saying this is what you had in mind, the stam aniyim. V'safik aniyim, v'nichnas l'chlal v'adai ramai. So it's no longer a safik aniyim we call stam, now he's a v'adai ramai. V'lachain sarach l'shalim pam sheni. Then for sure you should have to pay again. V'lo kein lo yotzi dei nidro, because otherwise you did not fulfill your neder. V'lefizai says, therefore, nearly, this seems to make sense, Lomar Tam Chadash, to give a new reason, Madue Mavarchan al Mitzvah Tzedaka. Why is it, like we discussed yesterday, that you don't make a bracha on Tzedaka? Ki b'chol ani yesh safek. Whenever ani you're going to approach, there's a doubt. Shemar hu ramai. Maybe he is a faker. Uve emes amru chazal b'ksubas amachas v'beis, where we quoted before, you saw. Bo v'nach ziktov l'ramayim. We should be grateful to the liars, shel malehem hainuchotim b'chayom, that if it weren't for them, we'd be sinners all the time for saying no. Uperish Rashi, shanu malim and ayim and haniyim, we cover your eyes, we turn away. Avalach shav haramayim garmim lano. So we would have been guilty for turning away, but now we can blame it on the ramayim. So the kavana shafal pi shanu chayavim. Even though we're obligated, I'll call upon him litain mitoch safek to give money at least as a safek. Mikomakom lo mebay lefi das hanuki yosef haran reish nadarim. So this, I was thinking of giving you a look at. I don't think I should put on the list, but some of the rishonim in the beginning of Maseches Nedarim take the position that a safek staka have a safek mamon. That we look at a question of safek in staka as if it's a simple monetary safek. So what's the rule of safek mamon? In general, hamotzi michaver lo haraya, right? That you are a putter from paying somebody who you're not sure you have to pay. So if that's the case, then vaday becholani efshali putter. So when anyone asks you for tzedaka, you could get off the hook. Because say it's a suffix moment, I don't know if you really are entitled. Below mar aisi sadi daniata itol. And you could say, bring me a proof, bring me witnesses that you're actually an ani, and then come and take. I'm not obligated to follow even the more likely possibility, and you need to have proof. When we call shekain b'safik, especially if there's a safik, and the basic obligation of staka, if you don't have a niyam that you can identify, you could be yotzei in a much more minimal way, shlishas hasheka. So, according to this position, that you see tzedakah as a suffik mamon aniyim, all the more, as a suffik mamon in general, so all the more so, if the guy is not undoubtedly legit, you should be off the hook, according to all this. Ela afa de very shonim, but even according to most rishonim disagree, that's the Ramban, the Rashba, the Rush, the first parak of the Dharam, the Mordechai, Shem Maram, the Sfira Luhud of suffik, tzedakah, chashad yisura. So according to them, a suffik and staka is treated like a suffik iser, and as linen lachumra, you go lachumra, mikol mako miyeshchiluk mivadai lasuffik beakalas haonesh. There's still a difference between suffik and vadai as far as the responsibility. Go to kamachilukim, a lot of other differences. Hayot silano mizeh, so what seems to emerge is, b'chol ani yesh suffik imhu ramai, there's always a question if he is honest or not, b'lochein af shechayav and litem lisuffik, but you have to give anyway, because of the suffix. So if we most Rishonim say that there's a suffix iser, so to not give me suffix is not going to be legitimate. You're going to have to give me suffix. But the komakom bracha levarchina, the suffix bracha is lahakil. That because of the suffix, that's why I don't make the bracha. I'm around rish perk madlikim mishum rifu of haigom chingas Rishonim from the terech haus mitzvah suffix komakom levarch. That even if you are making a doing a mitzvah misafik, you have to do the mitzvah, but there's no bracha. So that's a whole new interpretation on what the issue is of the lack of bracha for tzedakah. And then he says, "V'nachzor l'inyanenu." So to go back to our topic, the neder hare olai. If somebody says I'm taking on an obligation, the neder, b'vadei chayiv l'shalim nasum l'ramai. So you should for sure have to repay if you end up giving to a ramai. U'memeila havalei habalabayas hateveya. So then, in those situations, the balabayas is clearly the plaintiff. So if you took on a general obligation to give tzedakah, and this guy fooled you, so you're going to have to pay it to a real ani, and you're certainly going to have the right to sue this guy who fooled you. Aval benadava b'harei zeh, but when it comes to a specific item that was committed to tzedakah, where you're not responsible for making it up if it gets diverted. So in Nasan and Mizonos, if you gave that for Mizonos, a situation where Chazal said don't check, so then Havale Anas Machma Siva Chazal. So then that makes you into an Anas because of Chazal's instruction. V'ein Sarach L'Balabayis L'Shalim. So then you are not obligated to make it up to compensate for it. And therefore the Balabayis does not have standing to sue this Ani because it's no longer his responsibility. So what can you do with that? So we'll leave that as a little bit of a cliffhanger, and tomorrow we'll try just fill in this conclusion and to move to Matanos Debyonim. So, and I found that whole thing very, very fascinating. Hope you agree. And I got a lot to do tomorrow. And everyone should